What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote from my house today. Joining me, as always, is the CEO of Hedge Better. It is Christmas vacation week. I'm recording from home today, so if you hear any screaming children or crying in the background, I just want everyone to know this is not being recorded from some sort of perverse pediatric hospital. This is the routine normal sounds of my house every day. So I have to throw that disqualifier out there. Justin, what's going on, man? How are you?
I am doing well. Getting over the food coma from yesterday, man. A lot of good food. Gotta say, did some late night snacking on the leftovers when I got home. And yeah, just had a great holiday. I think it was.
Well, I'd ask you how your Christmas was, but we were spending together, so I know
exactly,
it was good.
Exactly. Yeah, we had a great time. I think, you know, the whole family was there, as always. Big food, big personalities, and a lot of fun.
Did you, Justin, you were the big winner of a pair of lovely slippers.
Yeah,
the family Yankee swap. Did you try those slippers on? And if so, what do you have back to report to the audience?
So I'm actually wearing them right now.
Wow.
Yeah, wearing them right now. And you know what? I got to say, I was in the market for a new pair of slippers. And when I saw them, I said, you know what? I couldn't pass up on it. So,
yeah, that's a big score. Big score for you, man. Big score in the Yankee swap. Good for you.
Yeah. I got to say, it's rare. You know, for those of you out there that do white elephants or the secret Santas, the Yankee swaps, all that stuff, I think it's very rare to come away with a gift, especially when you're doing, like, you know, $20 limits, $25 limits, stuff like that. It's rare to come away with a gift that you truly, truly value. I mean, like, how many Brookstone blankets and, like, sets of oven mitts do you come away with, right? Like, when you come away with a gift that you like, you got to consider it a successful exchange.
Like crappy TJ Maxx blanket or something like that, the gift card thing can be useful at times,
for sure.
Like the Dunkin' Donuts gift cards and stuff. That's useful.
Yeah, no, trust me, there's definitely some good gifts in there. The scratch ticket's always a big hit, which there were none of this year. I was shocked.
Yeah. We walked away with like this completely useless, like 12 candle thing.
Oh,
just
I saw
like
that.
Total waste of space, never going to be used, but such is the Yankee swap.
Exactly. It's a crapshoot. You know, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah. And most often you lose some. I had a great gift. I bought a funny, a talking Donald Trump pen that I bought for the Yankee swap yesterday, and I left it at home. So that, I think that would have been the best prize if I had actually just remembered to bring it. So now I don't know what I'm going to do with that thing. I'm going to give it to someone now.
Yeah, I don't know. That's honestly the most well-suited, you know, destination for a Donald Trump talking pen is a Yankee.
Yeah,
swap.
You need something. Yeah, you need exactly. Someone to bring like a couple of funnier gifts, like a little something more like a joke gift or a little bit lighthearted to make the Yankee swap work. If it's good to have a bad prize in there, it's good to have a couple joke prizes in there just because it kind of like adds to like the intrigue of like the game.
It does. Some of the most memorable Yankee swaps were marked by some of the worst prizes that were thrown in there. And I gotta say, oftentimes it was either you or your sister. I know I contributed a couple. I mean, and you know what, it kept things fun and interesting.
Yeah, there was one year I wrapped a fish up.
Exactly.
Like the snapper. Fish I got at the grocery store. The ugliest fish I could find. That was probably my low point.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about that the other day. It lives on, the fish.
Yeah, I think your mother wanted to literally kill me that year. Because I brought that into her house. I think she was like, get that thing out of my house now.
Exactly. And then that's what makes it funny, right? That reaction. So
awesome. Well, let's get to the Patriots. This is the Ultimate Patriots Dr. Football Podcast, and we do have a lot. It feels like ancient history now because it's Thursday. We've got Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. It's been 4 days, but we do want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the football team in Foxborough. And we have a pretty good roster of topics for the walking, moving reality show that is the New England Patriots, of what they've become. And I have a few observations I want to start with to get your thoughts on and see where you think this team is. But I've been telling you, Justin, let's kick it off with this. I've been telling you for the last few weeks that I think Jerod Mayo is coaching for his job in these final weeks of the season. And we've talked a lot about why that is. And we'll get a little bit into more about some of the other things I'm seeing. There's a couple new observations I have that I also think are concerning things that we haven't even talked about yet. But in terms of the game on Sunday against the Bills, and the Patriots obviously, I guess you could say, availed themselves very well. I've heard a lot of fans over the last 4 days just kind of taking a moral victory, the fact that they were able to stay competitive with Buffalo. And, you know, for me, Justin, I think I've expressed before, like, I'm done with moral victories. I need to see this team winning games at the end of this year for me to feel good about them. I don't think Sunday was a step in the right direction. I don't think it was good enough to save Mayo's job. And I think for many of us, and this is a little before your time, you know, the memory of that 1993 season, you were actually born when this happened, so you don't remember this. But for those of us a little older than you who are old enough to remember that year, and I reference it all the time because that was the year that Parcells came. They were 1-11. They won their last four games. For a lot of middle-aged dudes in New England that follow the Patriots, right, they remember how that season ended. That the 5 years before that, it was literally as bad a 5 years run as you could have in football for the Patriots. They were one of the worst teams in the league, but you could tell they were going to be good. And that's really what a lot of us are looking to see when we look at this year's Patriots team. And I'm sorry, we're still not seeing it. Another loss. For me, Justin, this was not enough. I don't think it was a big step in the right direction, and it doesn't move the needle for me on Mayo. What are your thoughts?
I don't think it changes anything for me on Mayo. I think, you know, and we heard, I think, rumblings this week coming out that said it speculated that he'll probably be back for another year next year. So it makes you wonder, like, is the pressure really on him? Is he actually coaching for his job? Does he feel like he's coming back next year no matter what, right? That's something that I wonder what the tone is, at least internally within him, his own camp, in himself. I was a little...
But even the reports that have been supportive of him, they always come with a qualifier.
For sure. I mean, and look, that's why I guess we don't know for sure. I mean, you know, I'd like to think that he really does need to prove something in these last couple of games. I'd like to think that it's not just a given that he will be back next year. I'd like to think that he doesn't think it's a given that he'll be back next year. So, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, in regards to the game against Buffalo, it was definitely, you know, a closer game than I think a lot of people anticipated. You know, I chalked that up to just being a divisional a rivalry game. I mean, I think back to these last 4 or 5 years, you know, as poor as the Patriots have been at times, they found ways to play Buffalo tough. I mean, Mac Jones beat the Bills. Like, you know, we beat the Bills. I remember in that snow game in Buffalo, like, we beat them last year. Like, we've found ways to come up big against this Bills team and play them tight. So, you know, oftentimes under, you know, in the last 5 years. So I look at it and I say, I think it's just a product of a rivalry game. It's a divisional game. The Bills might have been looking past us a little bit. You know, everybody gets hyped when they play someone in their division. So that's what I chalk it up to. I'm not reading too much into it. I don't think it was by any stretch of the imagination a step in the right direction, because I think that was a very winnable game and they wound up losing it. So if it was a step in the right direction, they would have came out with a win.
I agree 10,000% with that last thing you just said. For this to be a step in the right direction, they need to win. We've seen consistently for this team throughout the year that they're capable of staying close with teams.
Right.
They have actually lost a really large amount of very close games. And when people say they don't have the talent, this is a 3 or 4 win team by talent, I push back on that a little. I know they're not like a Super Bowl contending or anything like that caliber team in terms of the roster construction, but this team is showing us that they can be very competitive when they play well, especially since Drake May has taken over as the quarterback. And really what they're showing us is that they have a habit of losing very close games. But you saw on Sunday, I would say, another situation where this was a very winnable game that this team just somehow finds a way to lose. And to me, when I watch them and I see them at their best, able to play against a lot of these opponents, you know, of varying places in the league themselves, from good teams to bad teams, they're very competitive many times with a lot of these teams. I'm sorry, I do point that back to coaching, because I feel like that is, in a league where the margin of victory is oftentimes razor thin, it's the little things that add up that are putting the Patriots on the wrong side again and again and again, and you saw it on Sunday.
Yeah,
but I mean, it really is coaching to me.
It is, and you know what, to be fair, I mean, it's a lot of what we've been seeing out of this Patriots team for the last couple of years. And, you know, right or wrong, we attributed to coaching. We called out Belichick. We called out the coaching staff. Like, we said that a lot of the lack of discipline, a lot of the little mistakes, a lot of the shooting themselves in the foot, just the stuff that we weren't used to seeing from a Patriots team, like, we questioned the coaching. And that was when we still had the greatest coach of all time. So the fact that it's happening now with a rookie head coach, you know, first year defensive coordinator, like, all, you know, Alex Van Pelt, like, it's a no brainer for me to stay consistent with that and question the coaching. Because if anything, we've just downgraded ourselves and we're experiencing the same problem. So I think it's totally fair.
Yeah,
to
but Justin, coaching. we downgraded the coaching, but we upgraded the quarterback. And I think, like, that's the thing you have to remember. Like, Drake May is a much better quarterback than Mac Jones already ever was or will be. So, like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like they should be able to win games. When people say they don't have the talent, and I agree there are holes on this roster, are they just glancing over the fact that we have one of the five best cornerbacks in the league that takes away half the field every week, and we have one of maybe the 15 best quarterbacks? And I do have questions about May. We're going to get to him in a second. But I think he is at the very least an average quarterback already with a very high upside and clear playmaking ability that they haven't had previously since Brady left. So when we talk about, like, the talent on this team, we can't ignore the fact they added two pieces of top-end talent last in this season, and they're actually still coming up short again and again and again. And I think that is a testament to the fact that they downgraded at the coaching so much.
Yeah, totally, totally agree. I mean, look, this team, they definitely lack talent in key positions, but you can't tell me they don't have building blocks. You can't tell me there aren't some good players on this roster. I mean, this team is by far underperforming on the year. I know they're not, you know, a super talented roster, but this team should have, I think, 5-6 wins, like, at least.
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily. They've been in those games. They've been in, like, 6 or 7 games that you can say they could have won, but they've lost. If they just had taken half of those games, then they're easily a 6-ish win team right now.
Totally agree. Yeah.
And I'm going to say something that I think a lot of people in New England would say is crazy. I don't think the talent is as bad as some people say it is. They have the same two gaping holes we've been talking about for 4 years at lineman and receiver are still the problem. Yep. But aside from that, I don't think the talent is as bad as some people would tell you it is. I'm not saying it's the top of the league, but it's more like the bottom third, not the rock bottom.
I would agree. I mean, and you know what? The more we talk about this defense, you know, the more you think about it, outside of losing Judon, who really hasn't had a good year down in Atlanta. I mean,
You
got a lot of the same pieces. I know you lost Juwan Bentley. I know you lost Christian Barmore again, right? You really haven't had him all year. But, you know, you got enough pieces on this defense. Plus, you gained Christian Gonzalez. You didn't have him last year. So, like, you have enough pieces on this defense that you should be formidable, right? Like, and that's what I'm not really understanding.
How about not formidable? How about passable?
Yeah.
Below average. Can they be below? They're not even that.
I agree. And so that to me is concerning, because again, that's making me question coaching, because I don't see a reason why this team should be, or it, specifically this defense should be markedly different than they were the last few years.
A 1,000%. I thought on Sunday, Justin, that Alex Van Pelt's inexperience as a play caller really, I thought, shined through in this game. And we've talked a lot about Van Pelt, and you know, I think he's done an okay job this year, and he's definitely done a good job as a quarterback coach. There's no question about that. And there are times when I watch the way he coaches and even the play calling, and when they're aggressive and they're innovative, I think he's actually, in some ways, he's done a good job at that at moments. But the problem is he gets aggressive and then he gets scared that something bad is going to happen, and he pulls back. And you've seen it how many times this year, again and again and again, where – they're at their best when they're aggressive and they're letting Drake May make plays, and they make some plays and then they pull back because they're scared. And I thought more than anything, that's why they lost the game on Sunday. May threw that pick in the end zone and they got afraid at that point. And look, the guy, May, he's going to turn the ball over. He's a rookie and it's his game. They are at their best when they let him do his thing. And for some reason, they're afraid to let him do his thing. But I think a more experienced offensive coordinator would understand look, we have to stay with that aggressive mentality. I mean, the Lions won a game this year when Jared Goff threw five interceptions, right? You have to stick with what you have, what works best for you. A more experienced offensive coordinator does that. Van Pelt, I think his inexperience definitely showed on Sunday with the fact that they really stopped being aggressive.
I agree. And look, I'm going to bring it back to what I've been saying for weeks, you know, almost since Drake May got inserted into the lineup, which is, what do you have to lose at this point? Right. What is there to lose from being aggressive? You know, mistakes at this point all have the opportunity to be teachable moments and things that Drake May and this team can learn from. I don't understand why you're afraid of making them. The season is over in the sense of playing any meaningful football. You got a couple games left. Why not really go out there? I mean, you know, you're playing the Bills, the Chargers, playing some good teams. Why not go out there and let your quarterback just get some valuable reps? Make mistakes, learn, just get comfortable. I don't understand. Like, you know, he's got a 6-game lag compared to a lot of his colleagues starting for other teams, right? Let the kid just get as much experience in these last couple of games as possible. Let him cook. It doesn't matter if you win or not. It matters if he learns and if he gets better. And this is the best time to do it.
You know, yeah, I agree. And you say that, but the reality is they're not winning because they're trying to not, they're trying to avoid those bad plays. It's actually, they're giving up too many possessions on the offensive side of the ball because they're so afraid of Drake May. I feel like they coach Justin like they're afraid of Drake May. And it's ironic because I think that fear of Drake May is actually what is almost undermining them and making them lose.
You mean the fear of something happening to him, like him getting hurt or...
No, I think they're afraid of him making bad turnovers and losing the game for them. But what they have to understand is he's going to do that, but he's going to make plays to win them the game. He's all they have. His playmaking is all they have. So they should just let him rip. But I think they're afraid of him. They're still trying to win games. Remember the plan back in the preseason and Jacoby Brissett, and they're still trying to win games like that. Well, you've got a dynamic playmaker in Drake May. Just let him rip. Stop holding him back.
I totally agree. And if you're worried about like destroying the kid's like confidence or his psyche, or, you know, just rattling his cage, sit down and talk to him and go into it with the understanding that, hey, we're going to be a little aggressive. We're going to let you cook. If you make mistakes, that's fine. We're going to learn from them. Like we don't expect you to be perfect. Don't beat yourself up. Like I just don't understand why it would be that big of a hurdle. Like what the need is to treat him with these kid gloves.
A 1,000%. I mean, this is about developing a quarterback, and you know what? Like, let's face it. Like, I mean, what was the fear when he came in? He's going to get destroyed. Like, has it been that bad? It's been what, 10, 11 games now? Has it? I mean, he's definitely taken some hits, and I think he's taken more hits than I like. And I think he's taking more hits than he should take if you want to win football games. But it's not like it's been a disaster. Like, he's going to be sacked 60 times. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting hit more than he should, but it's kind of in the wheelhouse of what you see with a lot of the other below average teams in the league.
I agree. And so far, he seems to be pretty physically and mentally resilient, just at least early on. And I think those are two good signs.
100%. He's very resilient. Yeah. And let's face it, the biggest thing I worry about him is that, and we're going to get to this in a second, but the fact that he's not winning games, they're losing games. And I think that is another way that you can undermine him. It's not just, oh, he gets hit and he gets rattled and he becomes David Carr or Derek Carr and loses his confidence. It's also he gets used to losing and he develops a losing mentality. We'll get to that in a second. Let me ask you this, because we're talking about AVP and the play calling, Justin. I got to say, we've talked about some of the concerning indicators for this team and the coaching so far. And we've talked about the lack of leadership from Mayo. We've talked about the culture and how it's really non-existent or if it's been toxic.
Yeah.
We've talked about the losing close games. Can I add something else that I think is a really concerning indicator for why I do think they should move on from Jerod Mayo this year? And that is the lack of in-game adjustments. How many times have we seen this team come out and have a great start to a game, have a great opening drive or a great two opening drives, and then next thing you know, they don't score again until the end of the fourth quarter, if at all? It's a trend with this team where they come out fast and then it seems like they fall apart. It has to me tie back to the lack of in-game adjustments from the coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, they've gone from being one of the best mid-game adjusting teams to arguably the worst, you know, almost overnight when you swap out Bill Belichick and Gerard Mayo. And it has really been showing. Like, the Patriots under Bill Belichick always used to get better, not only as the season went on, but as the game went on, they got stronger. And this team looks the exact opposite. They look like they have the ability to come out hot, couple of nice scripted drives, and then as soon as other teams make adjustments and figure them out, they crumble. They don't know what to do. And it's
I mean, we've seen in the Rams, the Colts, the Bill, like the Jaguars.
The list goes on and on.
You know? So I don't know. I mean, I think there's something to that. And I think it probably has a lot to do with the coaching staff not making those in-game adjustments that more experienced coaching staffs are able to make. And like, when I think back to Mayo and this coaching staff, the two times this year where I can like look at a game and say they made adjustments and they had the advantage in the chess match, I would say one was the second Jets game when they were coaching against an interim coach that had just gotten the job. And the second was against the Bears, who ended up getting fired like a week later. So, I mean, generally speaking, they really haven't succeeded in like making those in-game adjustments that we all saw Belichick make expertly for so long.
Exactly. And look, when you're losing at that level of the game, that's where, like, you know, we talk about the talent level of the team. It's things compound, right? Like it's a multitude of factors coming together at play here. When you don't have the best talent and you're doubling down by not having the best coaching and the best scripts and your in-game adjustments suck and this and that, it all culminates in what we're seeing right now. It's a lot of factors contributing.
Right. And that's why they have the number two pick in the draft.
Right.
Even though they have a quarterback that's making plays. I do want to talk a little bit about the quarterback, Justin. I'm going to give you a take that I've kind of been rattling around in my head for a couple weeks now, but I've been a little hesitant to say it.
Yeah.
You know, I love May, and I think he's got a great ceiling, and I'm behind the guy 100%. But what he's really shown to me so far is he's not Jamarcus Russell. He's not, you know, Trey Lance. He's not one of these guys that doesn't belong on the field.
Right.
But that doesn't mean he might not be Mitchell Trubisky or Mac Jones or, you know, or some. I mean, there's a lot of guys that come in and they look okay, but then that's all that happens. Like, so I think we need to pump the brakes on Colin May, a franchise quarterback, because I don't think he's really showing it 100%. I think what he's showing is he has a tremendously high upside and he belongs on the field. But that's really all he's showing to me. I'm worried that in two or three years, we're going to be sitting there calling this guy a talented loser. And I know that's crazy because it's so early and there's so little around him, but it's in the back of my head somewhere because they just keep losing games. And in a couple of those losses, let's be honest, he's had chances to win. And he's made turnovers that we've explained away, including on Sunday against the Bills, a terrible pick in the end zone. He's missed opportunities to make plays at the end of games. And I know it's early for him. I'm not holding it against him yet, 100%. But it is in my head, the talented loser thing.
Well, you know, I think, like you said, it's early. It's definitely early. You know, I look at May, and I gotta say, I understand where you're coming from, but it just feels different with him. It just feels like he has the tools that Mac Jones didn't, right? He seems to just be like, he seems to have like the mental game figured out, right? He seems to be really solid, really resilient, as we mentioned, right? You know, the guy is just athletic. He's literally built different, right? He's physical, he's big, he's mobile. You know, he's got a good arm. Like, the guy really does seem to be the total package right now. I think, you know, as far as being sold on whether he's a franchise quarterback or not, he can't take that next step and convince us alone, right? Like, we're going to need to see this team start to win games. We're going to need to see them start to like improve in terms of the result that we're seeing in the field. And he can't do that all on his own. The coaching needs to be better. The talent needs to be better. There's a lot of things that need to change for those results to come. I mean, look, if he's going out there and balling and we're still winning 3, 4, 5 games a season, are we going to sit there and care or praise him as a franchise quarterback? No. So like, I think there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that need to come together alongside of his development before we can officially call him a franchise quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, and that's like what I'm going with right now, which you just said, like, you know, it's too early to really say that. Yeah. What I said, but I will say this, we've all watched sports long enough to know some guys just win. They have that winning energy, right? And some guys just lose. They have that losing energy. And I'm looking at Washington and I'm watching what Jaden Daniels did this week. And I know that's a much better situation with a much more better experienced coaching staff, legitimate weapons. Jaden Daniels has done magic at times this year. That is really, I think, just a reflection of who he is as a person, who he is as a player, and that kind of winning energy that he has. When Drake May has been in those situations, for probably a lot of reasons external to him, he has not done that much magic like Daniels has. He hasn't done the magic. He has not come through and found ways to win at the end of games like some of the players we've seen over the years that are like the true winners have right from the beginning. That's just a fact.
I agree. I think that right now we're not seeing this team lose because of him. And that I think is like the biggest difference for me. I mean, you know, there were plenty of times where, during the Mac Jones era where I thought we lost games because of Mac Jones. Right. And, you know, even though we can't say for sure that Drake May, you know, is a proven winner. I know there's a couple of games that we're questioning that they should have won, a couple of games where he maybe didn't play his best at the end or come through in the clutch. But at the end of the day, I really do, you know, think that this guy has a positive impact on his team. And I think that, you know, we just kind of feel like this team is letting him down more so than he's letting his team down. And I think that's the difference that when I compare him to Mac Jones.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're all hoping for, and that when you get a better team around him, when the situation is less impossible, then they start winning games. You know, honestly, like, let's face it, if they didn't have Drake May, they wouldn't even be in these games. Like, his playmaking is like a double-edged sword. I mean, it's what's keeping him in these games and getting them to the point where they even have a chance to win. It's because Drake May at times is so good, but then when it comes down to the end, it's still falling apart for really a multitude of reasons. And I think, like many Patriots fans, I hope it's more because of the external things and Mayo and the play calling, a lot of the things we've talked about, and not the fact that May is just a guy that is one of those guys that just doesn't win.
I agree. And only time is going to tell in this situation, because we there's a lot of moving parts to it.
Can I just give you one more quick take from the game on Sunday, since we're talking about May and Van Pelt and Mayo, and that backwards lateral call that led to Buffalo's touchdown? I've heard people blame May for that. That to me is 0% on Drake May. That was a design play. That was a stupid play call to run that from your own end zone. And by the way, Ramondre Stevenson, catch the ball and take the hit. And don't sell the farm and let the ball hit the ground. May did what he was supposed to do. That was a design play that you asked him to execute, and he executed. Blame Alex Van Pelt 80%. Blame Stevenson 20%. I don't blame May for that one at all.
No, if it was an errant pass, then yeah, it'd be one thing. But the kid did exactly, like, to your point, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. That was a play call. He threw a good ball. Stevenson dropped it, and it was probably the wrong play call for the situation and where they were in the field. So it's like, how do you go back and put that on May?
You talk about AVP being too conservative. It's like they run these screens. I feel like they never work. You know, they're afraid to throw the ball downfield, and they do that stupid stuff. And I think defenses just sit all over. It was a terrible play call.
It was. I mean, the play was going nowhere. But again, you know, that's not his fault, and it's one of those shoot yourself in the foot type of plays that we talked about all year with this team. And shocker, Ramondre Stevenson is on the other end of it. I mean, the guy just, you know, it can't seem to get out of his own way when it comes to fumbling in crucial situations, and that's really what it was. It was a fumble.
And May gets credit for the fumble, but it was that was a Stevenson fumble in my eyes.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, that would have been that Stevens is fumbled as well in the game, just a regular fumble. That would have been his second fumble, in all fairness, in my opinion. You know, this guy's fumbled seven times. We said this at the time, like that was a bad signing. That was a bad signing. We said it the day they did it. Why are you signing a running back to a $10 million contract? He's not that good. And I look at the running backs on this team. I have way more confidence and trust in Antonio Gibson, who they picked up on kind of like a veteran bottom of the barrel kind of deal, than I do Stevenson. And I just think like Stevenson is the kind of guy where you can draft a guy in the third round. You can pick a guy up in free agency. He'll do the exact same thing and probably not fumble as much.
I agree. And I also think it's funny because, you know, Gibson actually has been okay this year. But the guy that you brought in, Gibson, had a big reputation of losing the ball. He had a fumbling problem in Washington, right? Which is one of the reasons why they didn't re-sign him after his rookie deal. So to supplement a guy who is like leading the league, I believe, in fumbles, had that problem for years, you brought in a guy who lost his starting job for a fumbling issue. So it's like, what were they actually thinking when they put that plan together?
Right. Well, you hit the nail on the head, because a lot of Patriots fans are like, why is Stevenson on the field?
Right.
And the reality is, look at the roster construction. This is a case where they went into the year with basically two NFL running backs on the roster, knowing that Gibson had fumbling problems. Stevenson has had fumbling problems too. This is not a new, problem for Ramondre Stevenson. This has been his worst year of fumbling, but he's fumbled a couple times a year the last couple of years as too. So it was very imaginable to get into a situation where either from injury or fumbling, you were going to need to go down the depth chart, and they didn't bring in anyone. They didn't draft anyone. They really did a very poor job at building this running back room.
Yeah, totally agree. I'd be curious to see if they address it this year in the draft. But I mean, you know, you got Stevenson here on what was it, a 4-year deal, right?
Yeah, three-year deal, $10 million a year. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, we'll see, but I wouldn't be shocked if they went out and picked up.
Give me like three or four Antonio Gibsons any day over one Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah. Just platoon him.
Yeah. Exactly. They lose nothing in that when Gibson's out there.
Yep. Totally agree.
Okay, Justin, any other takes on the game from Sunday, or we're going to move around the league at this point, or you got anything else you want to bring up from that game? Any thoughts on any of the coaching decisions the second half, Mayo punting on 4th and 6, which the analytics said was one of the, by the way, worst coaching decisions of the year so far. I don't know if you saw that. but any other thoughts on the game from Sunday?
No, I mean, just
state of the franchise, anything?
No, I mean, you know what, like you said, it was just kind of a I don't read too much into it. It was a divisional game. They kept it close, but ultimately the lack of talent, the poor coaching, the bad decision making, it all caught up with them. And it's the same old story, same old song and dance.
And you still think Mayo is coming back, or you think he's still coaching for his job?
I worry that he's not coaching for his job, and I think that he's probably feels like he's going to be back one way or another. That's what.
Well, let me ask you one question before I move to around the league. If they roll back with Mayo, who's the fall guy for this year? Did they bring both coordinators back, or who gets guillotine?
I mean, you'd have to imagine that both AVP and Covington gotta be in the chopping block, or at least, you know, they're in the hot seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Maybe Elliot Wolf.
If you bring back Mayo, don't you have to fire one of those coordinators just to like
send a message? I mean, yeah,
send a message. I mean, you're gonna roll this back with Wolf, Mayo, Covington, and AVP again?
I don't think you can. No, that's the thing. I think if you don't move on from Mayo, you're gonna have to do something, because if you run it back with all four of them, I hate the message that sends. And I think it's, from a fan's perspective, I think it's, you know, pretty easy to see that that's not our best option.
Yeah. I've been saying for a couple of weeks, I wouldn't be surprised if AVP walks away at the end of the year. I would not assume that Van Pelt even wants to be here, given everything that happened. You know, one funny little thing this week, did you notice they run a few design runs for Drake May this week?
But you know what the funny thing to me is?
After the quote, you said it, I didn't, and now all of a sudden they start doing it.
I agree, but it's funny to me because Van Pelt kind of, when he fired back, he made it seem like that decision's coming from above his head. So, You know, I wonder who stepped in and said what or changed what. You wonder if it came from
I can guarantee you what happened this week. Okay, after Mayo threw Van Pelt under the bus, I'm sure they had a conversation, and I'm sure Van Pelt went to Mayo and said, Gerard, you're the head coach of this team. If you want to do quarterback runs, tell me. You're my boss. We'll do quarterback runs. And Gerard Mayo probably decided, oh, okay, let's do quarterback runs then, as if he couldn't have done it before. But he really doesn't know because he's so inexperienced. So I'm sure there was some kind of conversation like that, and they made the decision to go ahead and do it. But the way they got there was super dysfunctional, and I think that people assume AVP wants to come back. And when you see things like this, I'm telling you, I don't think it's a guarantee he even will want to be back next year. I think Covington is the fall guy because I think the defense has been – ultimately the bigger problem for this team, believe it or not, even though the offense hasn't been great. And I think Mayo, if they do roll back with him, you know, that's how you sell it to the fans. You fire the defensive coordinator. Maybe you bring in a new offensive coordinator if AVP walks away, and you try and build a better roster and hope it looks better in 25.
Yeah. But you know what? It's funny because, you know, we're sitting here talking about AVP, and if I'm being honest, you know, If we remove Mayo from the conversation, I think I'm way more concerned about Covington than I am about AVP.
Yeah,
I think their
defense has been a step behind literally almost the entire year.
Exactly, and I feel like of the four main characters here that we're talking about, Mayo, Wolf, Van Pelt, and Covington, he's the one that gets the least amount of attention.
Yeah.
So,
well, Mayo is like the deflector shield because he's a defensive guy, and he came in with a reputation as being someone that's like a skilled in defense, and when the defense doesn't look good, he has really taken a lot of the criticism for that. But at the end of the day, Covington is the coordinator, and you know, the idea of pairing up a coach that had never called plays before or even been a coordinator with a defensive coordinator that had never been a coach or a coordinator before was just from the beginning a disaster. So bringing in a more experienced defensive coordinator is probably going to be one of the ways you sell it if you do stick with Mayo.
Yeah, totally, totally agree.
All right, let's move to around the league, Justin, because we got a little bit of time left and I know there's a lot going on. I don't think we did around the league last week, or did we do a separate one? Maybe that's right. But I think there's a lot of stuff going on in the NFL right now. So I know we want to spend some time going through it. We have we are the beneficiaries recording this on Thursday. We have already seen the Christmas Day games, a couple of those week 17 games. The big story right now is the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs have clinched the number one seed. To me, Justin, the Chiefs really deserve to be like an 8-4 or 7-5 team this year coming down the stretch. But somehow they emerge from that as like 12-1. And what's frightening is they're hitting their stride now. And now they're looking better on offense, not 100% of where I think that they've been in years past, but really good. They come off two legitimate wins against two really good playoff caliber teams that were both one-sided wins. I thought they played a terrific game against the Texans and then follow it up with another really good game against the Steelers yesterday. The Kansas City Chiefs, Justin, are 14-1, and they're hitting their stride now at the best possible time.
Yeah, it's crazy when you think that this team has played arguably its worst football in years, and they've come out of it 15-1. Like that, it's a testament to a lot of things. And I mean, look, you know, it's crazy not to say there's a little bit of luck involved, but a lot of that luck is self-produced, right? They say that, you know, you can make your own good luck. And this team, they got winners. Patrick Mahomes is a winner. He's a proven winner at this point. The guy just always finds a way to come up big in the clutch. Super experienced team. They're really sturdy in all fronts. I mean, that defense is really lights out. I think they don't get enough credit for how good they are. And they just keep finding ways to win tough games against tough teams. Like, they've had a decent schedule. I mean, you can't say they've had a cupcake schedule.
They've had a tough – they've played most of the other really good teams.
Exactly, exactly. So to be 15-1 right now, have the number one seed locked up and clinched, you're peaking in terms of, you know, playing your best football of the season so far. And you're seeking a three-peat. I mean, you know, you can't ask much more for this team. I feel like you're nitpicking. at this point if you try to, you know, find stuff that's to complain
but
about.
Do you feel like I feel like they're not getting enough attention or recognition at this point? I mean, they're 14-1. They have literally won 2 Super Bowls in a row going for third, and they've just clinched the number one seed. They should be far and away considered the favorite for the Super Bowl.
Totally.
I feel like I hear Detroit, I hear Philadelphia, I hear Buffalo. You know, I don't feel like I hear Kansas City as much as I should.
Because I think you're hearing the exciting headlines. You're hearing what people are hopefully and, you know, hoping for and wishing for. I mean, Detroit is a much better narrative. Philly's a much better narrative. Buffalo's a much better narrative. The Ravens is a much better narrative. Like, people are desperately looking for an alternative to the Chiefs. It's what happens when you're dominant for that long and you win that much. People are just so sick of you, and they're just looking for any reason to keep the spotlight off of you and focus the attention elsewhere. And you know what? I think there's been a lot of reason this year for that to happen. There's been some really good teams. The Chiefs haven't played that good. But you know what? There's no way they should have the third best odds to win the Super Bowl. They should be the favorite right now. And I'll tell you what, I'm gonna be betting them the whole way, because I think this is a team that's fallen under the radar. And I think that when they play Baltimore, when they play Buffalo, you know, et cetera, in the playoffs, I think there's going to be some juicy lines, man. I really do think they're going to get disrespected.
They definitely well could be. When you look at that AFC playoff field, the one thing I will say, I don't know if it's a great field in terms of, you know, going up against a team of the Chiefs caliber. And when I try to look at, okay, who can beat the Chiefs in the AFC, you know, the two teams that jump out at you are obviously the Ravens and the Bills, as being, and the Bills have already beat them a few weeks ago, so I think that's legit. But one thing I've been saying all year about Detroit is that they have to watch out, because Minnesota and Green Bay are two really good teams in their division that are both going to make the playoffs. And it's tough to play a team three times. It's tough to beat a team three times in the same season. I feel like you could see the same thing about the AFC and the Chiefs, because both the Chargers and the Broncos are going to make the playoffs. And the Chiefs, let's face it, were very lucky. And I know there's some skill as a part of that too, but they were very fortunate to beat both the Chargers and the Broncos in recent weeks. So I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for the Chiefs through the AFC playoffs, if only because I do think that there's four teams of the other six that I think will have a legitimate chance to beat them in the postseason.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, the Chiefs team is definitely vulnerable. They're not by any means this, you know, this behemoth that can't be taken down, but I think at this point they deserve all the respect in the world. Like, they are the two-time defending champs. They are the number one overall seed. They're 15-1. They're beating a lot of these other teams that we're talking about as being contenders. They deserve their respect. It doesn't mean that I don't think there's other teams that can go in and challenge them. It doesn't mean that I don't think there's other teams that are in a good position to dethrone them. And I'm not saying they're not vulnerable. I just think they deserve their respect at this point.
They deserve to be the favorite, but they're not.
Right, which is crazy.
You said they're the third, right?
I believe they're the third behind. I believe it was Buffalo and Detroit. I'd have to double check that.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, so. I agree. They deserve to be the favorite, but I wouldn't be surprised if they got upset in their first game. I really wouldn't. If a team like, I really think Denver or the Chargers, they're not going to be intimidated to go into Arrowhead. They play there every year. Denver really should have beat them in Arrowhead a few weeks ago. Two teams that I would say have no prayer to go into Arrowhead and win is Pittsburgh and the Texans. That Texas team is soft. They're in a free fall. They're totally going to be a one and done. I don't even think they'll get out of the wild card round. And then that Steelers team, I think, is showing now that they hit a really hard portion of their schedule that they are more, you know, pretender than actual contender.
I agree. And you know what? I know it's still kind of a Hail Mary at this point, but I don't want to overlook it. The Cincinnati Bengals are still very much alive in this playoff race.
That was going to be my next topic, so go for it.
Bert, beautiful. Look, the Cincinnati Bengals, there's a very realistic scenario for them to end up in the playoffs. The Denver Broncos, they close out the season against Cincy, I believe this week, and then at Kansas City in week 18. Two very losable games for Denver. If Cincy runs the table and beats Denver and then wins in week 18, they're in. And I'll tell you what, if there's any team that has a chance to go into Buffalo and win, go into Kansas City and win, go against Lamar and win, it's this Cincinnati Bengals team. They're getting hot. They're getting healthy. And they've done it. Joe Burrow has been to a Super Bowl. He's won an Arrowhead in the playoffs. He's won in Buffalo in the playoffs. And that's the team that I would have my eyes out for.
I think I like this Denver team. You can't.
I do too.
Denigrate what they've done on defense. I think Bo Nix has been one of the surprises of the league. He's way better than people expected. People need to stop disrespecting him by calling him Mac Jones. He's not. He is absolutely showing that he is more than that. All that said, I think the AFC playoff field is better if Cincinnati's in there.
Agreed.
Cincinnati's a 7-8 team. I think there's a lot of hard luck in that record. Yeah. I don't think they're really a 7-8 team. No. I think there's hard luck. I think there's bad breaks. I really think that they deserve to be in the postseason. What might kill them, Justin, and you just mentioned this, is that last game in Arrowhead, Kansas City, are they going to have anything to play for? And right. The answer is no. The Patriots, when they've been in that situation in years past, Belichick always played to win because you don't want to have the 3 weeks off. One week off is the 2 week off, the bye week. That's one thing. To have the 3 weeks off, it seems like it burns teams all the time when they take that 3 week break. Look at how many years the Colts lost in the divisional round when they clinched the number one seed in week 16 or something like that. And they took week 17 off. We've seen it so many times, but I don't know how Andy Reid will handle it. And it might be working against the Bengals is the fact that it might be Carson Wentz or Bailey Zappi playing quarterback for the Chiefs, and the Broncos might get a layup into the AFC playoffs if only for that reason.
Yeah, you're totally right. And the Broncos will have everything. Like you said, the Broncos will have everything to play for. The Chiefs won't really have much to play for. And I'm sure if you're Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and you're over there strategizing, you might say, look, if we're playing the long game, who would we rather run up against in the playoffs? Would we rather run up against Bo Nix in Denver or Joe Burrow in Cincinnati?
Joe Burrow, who's beaten you in Arrowhead before.
Yeah, multiple times. So it's like, and should have won the game earlier this year between them, the two of them. There was that, the bullcrap penalty at the end. But anyway, So I think if since he's got a real uphill battle, but it's going to be very interesting to see what the Chiefs do in week 18, providing obviously that the Bengals can beat Denver this week. That's the matchup to watch.
Is that game in Denver or Cincinnati?
I believe it's in Cincinnati, but I will have to double check that.
Yeah. That's going to be, it's basically a playoff game at this point.
Exactly. Yeah.
With the way things have gone.
For sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the NFC, Justin. The Eagles Red Commanders game on Sunday, absolutely terrific game. Huge win for the Commanders. Let's not forget that Jalen Hurts went down on the 10th play of that game. And I think that the Eagles, if you watch that game, they called plays like they were scared of Kenny Pickett. And they should be scared of Kenny Pickett because he is as shaky as it gets back there in terms of a backup quarterback. I thought he really tried to give the game away on several plays. I thought their inability to rely on him to make plays for the first 3.5 quarters is why the Commanders were even in that game. And I think that, if I'm being honest, I can't hold it against the Eagles that they lost that game. I mean, it's a big setback to them because they're definitely going to not get that number one seed now. It comes down to Detroit and Minnesota next week, it looks like. But I still think, I don't really blame the Eagles for losing that game because Jalen Hurts will be back.
Yeah, I will say, though, when it comes to the Eagles in – it's actually very shocking because, I look at the way that the Eagles have gone about constructing this roster and making sure they're very deep. They're very talented. They're solid across all fronts, right? Like they've really done a great job of building a truly, truly complete roster. Yet Jalen Hurts has had health issues at the end of the season in the playoffs the last couple of years, right? And it's been arguably one of the reasons why this Eagles team hasn't been able to take that final steps with him. I think it's a very situation to what you have down in Miami. how the hell is Kenny Pickett your plan B situation? You know, and I don't understand. I think it's crazy. But, you know, with that being said, I don't blame the Eagles a ton too. I think, you know, it was a tough game. I think if Jalen Hurts stays and is healthy, I think they easily win that game by two, maybe three scores. So, you know what? I think that was just one of those moments that everything kind of changed when their leader went down. And, you know, it's football. It happens. Again, it's another divisional game. Washington was playing Philadelphia tough even when they had Sam Howell last year for two games. You know what I mean? So, again, it doesn't shock me. I don't read too much into it. And I think if they're healthy in a rematch, I think Philly would hopefully or should win pretty handedly.
I agree 1,000%. And on the other side of the ball, I know we kind of hit on this a second ago with we talked about the Pats, but Jaden Daniels is absolutely amazing.
Stud.
The plays he's made this year in like the most critical spots and times. I mean, you don't see players like that have that winning energy come along very often, but I think there's something super special about it. I mean, if the draft was redone today, I mean, come on, who wouldn't take Jaden Daniels over Caleb Williams? This guy just has it. And you know, that Washington situation, it's pretty good, but let's not pretend like it's you know, the 85 Bears either. Like, the defense is okay. Dan Quinn is an experienced guy. He's not Amos Alonzo Stagg. Right. They got a couple good receivers. We're not talking about the 99 Rams here. You know what I mean? Like, it's a good situation, and Daniels has elevated it for sure. But it really is. He just got that vibe, man. Where, I mean, he's one of those players that just has that winning vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think the Commanders lucked out big time with him. He's looking like he's an instant game changer, franchise quarterback. You know, and I think they got the right guy to build around. I mean, you know, that new ownership group in Washington, I think they've made some really good moves since taking over, and I think he's the best one so far. And you know, I think that's going to be a tough team to play this year. But I think even, you know, moving forward in the future, that's going to be a really good Commanders franchise.
That's how it would seem. That's how it would seem now. You know, you never know. The one thing I will say is you do worry about injury with Daniels because he's so small and he moves, he runs so much. But it does look like they're set up for a good run the next couple of years.
Totally. Yep.
Let's talk about a few teams on the other side of the league, some of the bad teams that we're still keeping an eye on. I got to say this. We talked last week about should the Jets roll it back with Aaron Rodgers, and the fact that, you know, they may not have a top five pick. They may have the number 8 pick was a great point you made, so maybe it makes sense. I watched him again against the Rams on Sunday, and the reason I watched so close is because I was in my fantasy playoffs and the guy I was playing started the Jets defense, or started the Rams defense, excuse me, against the Jets. So I was actually in the unenviable position of having to root for Aaron Rodgers in the Jets.
Yeah.
Watching that game, Justin, made me realize this guy just doesn't have it anymore. There's no way anyone should go into next year with Aaron Rodgers as a starting quarterback unless they're really looking to tank for draft position. That's the only way I would say it makes sense. You're looking for a true bridge one-year thing. But any team that's serious about rebuilding or winning or making the playoffs, this guy has lost it. He just doesn't have it anymore. You can see the way he throws the ball, the way he moves. It's still okay, but it's not what it was even a few years ago. This guy has lost it, and he should retire, and the Jets should move on from him.
Do you lend any of that to the fact that it's, you know, first year back from Achilles surgery, and, you know, he may, after having a full year under his belt, come back looking like a different guy next year? Or at least,
are you going to hang your hat on that, on a 41-year-old guy that has shown an unwillingness to work hard in the offseason, participate in a program, wants to go sit in an isolation chamber in, you know, at Mesa, Arizona, instead of being in your training facility?
I mean, I'm not, but I feel like New York is so desperate, man. They've invested
they're so stupid.
Yeah, they've invested so much into it. They've made so many dumb decisions along the way. Like, I don't know, man. I don't put it past them.
You know what, Justin? That's what it would be. It would be a dumb decision. And right. You're right. You shouldn't put it past the Jets, because there's a reason why the Jets are the Jets. But if you're really thinking logically about it, there's no way you can run back with this guy. If you want to know what the right decision is, it's to move on.
Yeah.
Now, what will the Jets do? Well, the Jets have like a 50-year history of making the wrong decision. So you tell me. I mean, could he come back? Yeah, I suppose he could. Right. But that would be a colossal mistake. Yeah, and frankly, a mistake I would relish, because it's been great theater to watch this implosion over the last year. I mean, really, it's had tremendous entertainment value.
Totally, totally, totally agree. Honestly, I was willing to kind of let them have their moment. The organization just had so much crap for so long. And you know what? But just seeing them continue to fail, it makes me realize, like, I don't know why I was ever rooting for them to get it together. It's so much better watching them crash and burn.
I mean, this has been one of the most epic crash and burns. Let's not forget that Jets were considered Super Bowl contenders this summer, like in August. People were picking them to make the Super Bowl. Look where they are now. They're drafting at the top of the league. At least for the Patriots, they suck, but it was expected they suck. The Jets have had a consistent lowering of the bar week by week from like training camp on to now, where it's like, okay, it's just total implosion.
Agreed. Yeah, they've hit rock bottom at this point.
All right, anything else you want to talk about around the league? Any other teams that caught your eye?
No, but I do think you made a good point calling out the fact that Green Bay, I think, is getting slept on a little bit. Everyone's talking about Detroit and Philly. I think that Green Bay team is legit, and I would not want to play them in the playoffs.
It's actually, maybe we should mention this, it's a stacked NFC field this year. You look at this NFC field, you tell me where the softball is. I'm looking at the Eagles. That they're a good team. The Commanders are the kind of wild card you don't want to face, exactly, in my opinion.
Yep.
The Rams are getting hot. I thought they were going to be one of the best teams in the conference. They were decimated by injury early in the year. They've clearly recovered. They've put it together. I think they're hitting their stride at the right time. They're going to win that division. And then the Lions, Vikings, and Packers are all going to win between 12 and 14 or 15 games. You talk about a top-heavy stacked NFC. And oh, by the way, the Buccaneers, look, the NFC South, I mean, look what they did last year in the postseason. They won a game and they gave Detroit a run for their money. Yep. I think that's a battle-tested, scrappy team, if nothing else. And if they're the worst team in that NFC playoff field, the Buccaneers, that's a pretty strong field, top to bottom.
Totally. Totally agree. That is, you know, for the longest time we've been saying the AFC stacked and the NFC is the cakewalk. The AFC is good too. Don't get me wrong, but the NFC has proven much better than I think any of us thought. It's going to be a bunch of quality teams in there. It is going to be super interesting to see who comes out of it again. You know, I think we're going to be surprised, because I think the NFC is going to be one of those situations this year where just anybody can do anything. I would have put past any one of those seven teams to make a run.
Yeah, you're right. And one of the funny things is this league has really tried to engender parity across the league and make like mediocrity. But somehow this year, the league became very top heavy, right? We have all these awful teams at the bottom, the Patriots and the Jaguars and the Titans and all these 2-3 and 4-1 teams that are terrible. There are more teams in that bottom tier this year, which mathematically means there are more teams in the top as well. It's a top heavy league this year. And I think that that's going to make for a better playoffs in both conferences. Like, these are both strong conference playoff fields, I think, compared to some other years.
Totally. Yeah, totally agree. I think it's going to be awesome. I think it's going to be interesting. I think everybody is just holding their breath until Kansas City gets out, right? I think that's going to be the big sigh of relief for fans across the NFL, knowing that we'll get to crown a new champion. But even for the time being, while they're here, it's exciting, man. I'm looking forward to it. The playoffs are shaping up. Really to just be very exciting. We're going to get to see some good teams, some good players, and you know what, like you said, the parity is at, I think, an all-time high this year.
It's at an all-time low this year, because the good teams and the bad teams. You know what I mean? So I know what you meant. That's why I clarified.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So last thing, Pats Chargers this week, Justin, what are you looking for in this game Saturday in Foxborough? It should be a little warmer, I think. So they're going to get a little lucky with the weather. But what are we looking for on Saturday? Are we looking for competitive? Are we looking for a win? What does Draw Manny need to do to save his job?
You know what? I think
the answer could be nothing. He needs to do nothing because he already has it.
And I'll say it again. That's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that he doesn't need to do anything. I'm afraid that he thinks he doesn't need to do anything. I think he thinks this is all just part of the natural progression, and that the media and the fans and everyone's overhyping it, and that, oh, silly guys, this is just the first season. This was always the plan, you know, to struggle and learn, and I'll be back in year two. And I almost feel like his hubris, maybe his kind of, you know, engendered him to the fact that he's coming back no matter what next year. And so that's what worries me. But with that being said, I do want to see this team come out and compete. I want to see them win. I think this Chargers team, they're good, but they're beatable. And I also would just like to see, you know, just because I'd like to see Jalen Polk maybe step up and have a game. Just, you know, you're going against Ladd McConkey, who's looking like a clear franchise caliber wide receiver.
At least a good wide receiver.
At least a good one. Somebody that you passed up on. I'd like to see, you know, it's the end of the year. Let Drake May fly, get some of these young receivers involved, force Jalen Polk to get involved in the game and have a big game.
I want to see a couple things on Saturday. One is, obviously, I want to see them win.
Yeah.
But I want to see them score more than 30 points. They're one of only two or three teams in the league now
that's
never hasn't scored more than 30 points one time this season. I want to see them let it rip. I want to see May play good against a good defense. I want to see May outduel Justin Herbert, who I think is the quarterback he's most similar to, frankly, in terms of physical skill set. So I'm looking for all that on Saturday. And I still think Mayo can think whatever he wants about his job security. And I think if Robert Kraft was 10 years younger, he'd be right. But I'm telling you, if Jonathan Kraft gets the influence at some at some point, the power is going to transition from Robert to Jonathan. And if it's this year that that happens, then I think Mayo is literally will absolutely be fired this offseason. And that's one thing you can look for on Saturday.
Exactly. Yeah, that's going to be one of the storylines to follow. And again, I think, you know, we got two weeks left for Mayo to kind of show us something. But you know what? He's got an uphill battle to fight because I haven't seen much yet, and it's going to be a lot to prove in 2 weeks.
Awesome. So, all right, man. Well, that's all the time we have. I want to thank everyone that listened to this Christmas week edition of the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots podcast. Wishing you all a blessed and wonderful holiday season, a happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, happy holidays. And we'll catch you all next year. We'll record one more time before the end of the year, early next week, and then we'll see what happens in this penultimate week of the NFL schedule and take it from there. Have a great week, everyone.